Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Monster Movie Media presents...
Welcome to episode 115 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, a podcast about the creepiness and spookiness of Disney and beyond. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we welcome Rick West from Theme Park Adventure on the show. And he tells us what it was like covering theme parks back in the mid-90s before everybody had access to the internet. So without any further ado, let's begin. All right, I'm here with Rick West. Hello.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm super. Yourself?
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for coming on. So you are the founder. I'm not sure the exact title that you give yourself, but
I think at this point it's like Grand Poobah.
Grand Poobah.
it is the founder and editor-in-chief of Theme Park Adventure.
That's right. So, in case someone's unfamiliar with Theme Park Adventure, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is?
You bet. Yeah. So, Theme Park Adventure has been around a while. We're 22 years old this year.
Wow.
The summer we'll turn 23. Basically, in 1994, I decided to start a fanzine, and there weren't very many back then, and definitely not very many dedicated to anything outside the realm of Disney.
Right.
So, I mean, you could count them on one hand, the publications that were out there. And really the only ones that were doing other parks, I mean, you had the E-Ticket, the Jansen brothers did the E-Ticket, and they did really amazing issues. They were fantastic, and they certainly loved what they did, and it showed, and they were unequaled. Their work was amazing. You had Storyboard, The Art of Laughter. You had Persistence of Vision. And you had Ace had the Roller Coaster Magazine. And we were born, I guess.
Okay.
As I stumble over my words, this is going to be a really great interview, James. I haven't even started drinking yet. Maybe that's the problem.
That's the problem, yeah.
We're going to handle that right about now. I loved Disney. I loved Knott's. I grew up with all the parks here in Southern California. I loved Las Vegas. And I loved zoos. And I, everything, right? So I just wanted to create something that was kind of all-inclusive. And that's what I did. I did that in September of 1994.
Wow.
And the way that we started was, you know, I figured that I was just going to do these big historical book-type things. And that's what Theme Park Adventure was really going to be. And they were called feature issues. And since I lived in Irvine at the time, I grew up in Irvine, my house was very close, like maybe 2 miles as the crow flies from Lion Country Safari. And so the first thing that we were going to do was going to be an issue called Lion Country, The Lost Safari. And it was going to be the entire history, the rise, and the devastating fall of the Lion Country Safari Company. That long story short, because I mean that's a whole interview in its own right. Long story short, didn't get any cooperation really from many of the people that were behind the ownership of the company. Hmm. So that kind of went nowhere fast, and I switched my sights to I wanted to do something then on the history of Pirates of the Caribbean, and I knew though that this stuff, you know, doesn't come overnight. It's really, really labor intensive. And especially right. We're talking back in the day, there wasn't the internet. I couldn't Google pictures.
Right.
Of any of this stuff. You know, there was no, you know, you didn't have InDesign. You didn't have any of this, you know, stuff that we have today that really helps us lay things out. So I knew that I needed a filler because I already, with my big mouth, I had already said that I was going to come out with this new publication. And, I knew that I needed a filler, so I came up with a monthly newsletter. We called it The Break Zone. And The Break Zone, it had the Theme Park Adventure logo on it in small in the corner, and then Break Zone in big letters across it. And it really kind of started out as this really sad little – it was this like, you know, 3 or 4 page, one-sided, all-text, stapled in the corner newsletter. Wow. And it grew very quickly over the next couple of years. It grew into a monthly publication that had pictures and was an honest-to-God little magazine.
How were you distributing that back then?
So at first, it was just by word of mouth. I mean, it was people that I knew that were fans. And I mean, and it's hard for people to think about it today, but we had no social media. There was no internet as we knew it, right? So I couldn't get email lists or anything like that. It was really word of mouth. And God, you know, it's been so long. That's a great question because I think back and I go, I don't know how the hell I got people's addresses because it wasn't just like, you know, 5 creepers in Irvine that wanted my newsletter, right? There were people literally all over the world that I had addresses for.
Wow.
And it was really weird. But one thing that I did do that today would probably get you thrown in jail, but back then – I sent copies to certain individuals at Imagineering, unsolicited. Just I address it to them, excuse me, and I put the Imagineering address on it, and off they went. And that's how certain people there at WDI started to get to know TPA. So looking back, hindsight, that was a pretty smart move on my part. And today it would probably just end up in the trash, right? It would come back, return to sender.
I was like, why do you think it would go to jail for mailing something?
Yeah, so I'd be on all sorts of, like, you know, watch lists if I did that stuff today.
Right.
But you know, back then it was kind of – it really was kind of like the Wild West of self-publishing. I mean, I was self-publishing TPA before self-publishing became a thing.
Right, yeah.
And so I did it on my trusty Amiga 2000 computer. I did it on my Commodore and printed it out and old school templates. I print them out and then I would take the pictures that I wanted and reduce them to whatever size I needed them for each page. And I would print them out, you know, at Kinko's as you know, laser copies, you know, colored laser copies. And then I would come home and cut them out and then I'd use the glue stick and I would glue them onto the template. And wow. Then I would take this big bulky template back to Kinko's and tell them I wanted, you know, 50 copies or, you know, whatever it was going to be. And yeah. 4 days later, I picked up the, you know, the monthly Break Zone in boxes. And that is really, excuse me, that's really how TPA was born. And everything was just kind of, I guess, organic. Is the best way to describe it. You know, I really didn't start TPA thinking, oh, I'm going to get to go to snazzy media events and be on VIP. None of that. I just wanted, as a fan, to write about attractions and things that interested me, because I figured if they interested in me, there were other fans out there just like me that wanted to hear about this stuff.
For sure. I mean, I mean, that wasn't even a possibility. Media events, you know, when you were doing something, that couldn't have even been on your radar.
Well, it was really weird. I'm sipping my Manhattan now.
Nice.
Now I will be more coherent. You know, back then, there were media events, but it certainly wasn't something that was really on my radar. Mm-hmm. And so when I started getting invited to things, it was kind of this realization of, wow, you know, not only do we get to write about these things, we get invited to these pretty cool little parties. And so it was kind of a bonus round.
Right, of course.
You know, one of the very first things that we covered was, and I, no particular order really, because it kind of all goes together like mush after 22 years. But we covered the opening of Mystery Lodge at Knott's Berry Farm. And that was one of our very first media events that we went to. We covered the, from afar, we covered the building of Montu, the amazing B&M roller coaster at Busch Gardens, Tampa. Oh,
okay.
And I'll loop back to that in a minute, though, because that was an important milestone when we started doing that. We covered the opening of Blizzard Beach. We had a whole Blizzard Beach issue type thing. We did, and another thing that we'll go on a more detailed tangent about in a minute, I also started covering Not Scary Farm. Right. And my own love for Haunt goes back to I went as a kid in the very early 80s. I started going to Knott's Halloween Haunt. And so that was something that was very near and dear to my heart. And really, except for the fleeting, you know, little blurb in the Times about maybe like the makeup process to put, you know, the monsters at Knott's,
yeah,
or a Weather Channel report from Knott's, nobody had really written anything or documented much,
really?
You know, wow. Not Scary Farm. It just was not really a thing. And so we started doing that as well. And like I said, we'll come back around to that too. Now, we also formed a really good relationship with Luxor in Las Vegas. I watched Luxor being built, and we in turn formed, because they used to have the Doug Trumbull attractions. They had the attraction level, and it was the Luxor trilogy that they had. On the attractions level there, which really doesn't exist anymore. It's kind of where the Titanic exhibit is and bodies and all that stuff now.
Oh, okay.
And the IMAX theater. And I became very good friends with the gentleman that ran the attractions department there. And so got so involved with Luxor that we were invited to their first anniversary party, which was really great.
Wow.
And in doing that, that also marked a milestone for TPA and the Break Zone, in that it was the first time we got away from doing just text, and we actually had an image in this newsletter, which was big news. That was a big deal for us.
Sure.
And actually, I tapped the very first graphic image that TPA had, I tapped my good friend, childhood friend, Chris Merritt. He's the one that has done the Knott's Preserve book, and he has a book on Pacific Ocean Park, and he's got a new book on Mark Davis coming out.
Oh, nice.
And Chris drew a picture of the Luxor, and the source of the light beam was a birthday candle at the top of it. And that was making the light beam at the top of Luxor.
If people have never seen the Luxor, it kind of looks like a huge black pyramid, right?
Yep, it's a big black pyramid with one of the brightest man-made lights on Earth at the apex.
Yeah, it definitely sticks out along the strip there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very unique. I mean, it's showing its age now, but I mean, back then it was really something. It was the biggest thing on the strip for a while. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, that was one of the first things we did. And then we got a letter one day, because, you know, letters, there was no email.
No email.
we got a letter one day saying from Busch Gardens, Florida, saying we want to have you at the media opening for Montu. And, you know, they appreciated our coverage leading up to it and really wanted to have us out. And I said, well, that's great, but I'm young and have, like, no income at all or whatever. And they're like, no, we want to fly you out.
Wow.
To fly you out, and we're going to put you up for a few nights at a hotel, and you're going to attend the media opening and party and everything for Montu, and you can take all your pictures, and you're going to ride the ride, and then we'll fly you home.
Dude. That's awesome.
And, yeah, that was a major crossroads. That was like a holy crap moment, you know. And so they did. They flew. And then at the time, the partner working with me, his name was Bob Barber. Bob and I flew out to Tampa, and we were there, and we did Montu. We were there for the opening of Montu, and that was the first time a park ever flew me out for the opening of anything. And in years to come, afterwards, Universal flew me out several times for the opening of things. Fear Factor, the Mummy roller coaster, the opening of the Royal Pacific. So back and forth I went across the United States. And that was pretty cool, you know, for TPA back in the day to be able to do that. And very humbling. And we loved that. And so we've had a long, long, long relationship, very fruitful relationship with these companies. But I really, since we lived here in Southern California, since I lived here, we really focused on, and what I keep saying, I'm not talking the third person like Donald Trump. I'm saying I actually had people that helped me out over the years, you know, take pictures at parks and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And, so we covered like the, construction and opening of Jaguar at Knott's and, you know, the big cat of roller coasters. And, all sorts of different things right here in Southern California, just because they were so accessible.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
And so we, when you did that back in the day, you had to do your pages by four. So you either had a 4-page or an 8-page or 12-page. It went by fours.
Right. Because you fold it in half, fold it in fours.
So it started embiggening on itself. The more I wrote about things, the newsletter got bigger and bigger and bigger every month, right? Mm. And so then we had things like the honest to God legit farewell to the Main Street Electrical Parade. the first time it actually, you know,
was glowing away.
Right? Oh my God, I got to take another sip right now. And that was one of our first really focused, like, the break zone was a dog's breakfast of whatever was happening. It was multiple. It was like a newspaper, right? Mm-hmm. So the Main Street Electrical Parade issue was one of the first I did that was just dedicated to one subject. And it was it was 16 pages. It was a 16 page, pretty much the entire thing was an exclusive interview with my friend Don Dorsey, who was the gentleman who, with Jack Wagner, recorded the Electrical Parade soundtrack that we all loved and grew up with.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so he gave me pictures that, you know, had never seen the light of day of he and Jack actually at Jack Wagner's house recording the Electrical Parade. Really amazing pictures of some of the units, some of the older units, and really just a really great interview. You know, the last time I checked, Don Dorsey, he does have a website. Look up, Google Don Dorsey Productions, and it will come up. And the last time I checked, he had that interview. I want to say he had that interview in its entirety on his website. Oh, so cool. You guys play with your Google and see if you can pull up Don's site. And I think the Electrical Parade interview is still there.
I'll look forward, and if it's there, I'll put it in the show notes for the episode.
Yeah, if it's there. Yeah, I know at one time it was. So if it's there, then that is fantastic. If not, well, you guys are late by 20 years. So that was really great, you know, and then that marked kind of a milestone of – and people went nuts for it. You know, it was like, yeah. Oh, we can do this dedicated thing where it's just one subject, and people really freak out about it, and they love that. And the response was really great about that. So – then we started taking on bigger projects. Like we started really covering another turning point came when we started really covering the construction of Indiana Jones at Disneyland. Now, by that time, I had formed a, I guess you call it a working relationship with Tony Baxter. He knew who I was. I certainly knew who he was, and he was always very cordial with me whenever we'd bump into each other at the park. And he was at the park a lot those days when they were building Indy. And the same goes for Marty Sklar. Marty Sklar was there a lot too. So Marty and I became first name basis as well. And they were very kind. They were always very generous with their time and very kind towards me. And, you know, they just fed me information about Indy. And that opened doors for me to start talking to Susan Bonds, you know, who was the producer on the project. And so we covered Indy all the way from its construction through – you know, the very first time they let anybody get a really good look at it was during one cast member Christmas party where they allowed us to walk through the queue all the way up to the load area.
Wow, that must have been a thrill.
The first time anybody had been able to do that. So we did that. We took pictures. I took pictures of Tony. He was greeting people and answering questions standing on the load platform. And so I, you know, took pictures of him. He was in his Indy costume and all that. And it was a really magical time. It was probably – you know, that was the golden era. That was the second golden era, really, for Disney during, you know, Team Disney, Michael Eisner and Frank Wells.
Michael Eisner time, yeah.
And Jeffrey Katzenberg, you bet. And so they were pushing for these big e-ticket attractions. That was a big deal. And because of my relationship, I'm sure, with Tony and with Marty and other people on the team, something I'm very proud of. Theme Park Adventure was the first fanzine ever to be recognized as legitimate media by the Disneyland Resort. And we were invited to the 3-day opening event of Indiana Jones.
Wow.
And that was a big one, you know, we've had a lot of plateaus and a lot of really cool feathers in our cap over the past few decades. That was a big one. Being accepted and you know, getting a welcome letter by Disneyland Media Department, that was really special.
Sure.
And so we attended that, and I published it was big. I want to say it must have been 24 pages. It was a big issue on Temple of the Forbidden Eye, and it was just like everything you could imagine about the ride.
Wow.
And that was really funny because I sent, you know, like I had been doing, like any good stalker, I was sending the issues to Imagineering every month. And I sent Tony and Marty, you know, obviously the Indiana Jones issue. And I wish I still had it. I don't think I have it anywhere. Back in the day when we had answering machines that had, you know, little cassette tapes.
Micro tapes.
Tony called and left the nicest message because he had just gotten his at Imagineering. And he just couldn't believe it. He was like, I am blown away. This is absolutely legit. This is so good. And then,
wow,
here's a funny story. I gave him a call and we were talking and he was so, so kind and just praised it up and down and said how wonderful it was. And he said, look, you know, the company didn't really do anything special for the team, the core team. Would it be too much to ask to have copies sent to each one of them here at Imagineering too, so they could have this as a memento. And I was, you know, I was honored. I was like, oh my God, of course, absolutely I will. And he said, okay, great. There's 52 people.
Oh, that's a lot of cutting and stapling.
Holy crap. And in my mind, I'm trying to add up how much this thing is, you know, that I'm going to make, you know, gratis to these people. But I did it, and it was worth every penny because it really kind of locked us in as a legitimate media source for Disneyland. And certainly it was a labor of love that we did, and they all had such nice things to say. And everybody was just so appreciative that a fan would take time, you know, to do that kind of thing. And really that was another huge, I want to say, crossroads for TPA, the Indiana Jones issue that we did. And I will preempt any questions you have about this. I think I have to my name maybe one copy of each of the Break Zone, and they are locked away in some vault like storage unit I have in Las Vegas, and I have not seen them for years and years and years. The only people that had another copy that I knew of, my grandparents had a copy, and years ago now, my grandmother had a fire in their apartment, and all the break zone issues were lost.
Oh, wow.
In the apartment. So very few of those exist too, and being done on the Amiga computer, there's no way to go back and reproduce any of those, because they're all, you know, programs that have not existed for decades.
Sure. Well, I do have to interject here and say that you started in September of 1994.
Yes.
And Indiana Jones opened in March of 1995.
Yes.
So you accomplished all that in that small amount of time.
We did so much. It was.
That's crazy.
It was so crazy. So here's what. At the time, I worked at a photo lab in Irvine, so that helped. I would be able to go to the park and take a million freaking pictures of whatever I needed to take pictures of. And I could come back and process my own film and print everything for, you know, like cost.
Right.
So it was very cost effective to do, you know, the break zone and work at a photo shop, you know.
Sure.
That helped a lot. But yeah, man, it was really time consuming. I mean, you know how it is doing the podcast and everything and your documentary. Anything that we take on, especially today, even though it's all in the digital realm, all this stuff is really time consuming. So you can imagine how time consuming it was to print all this physical stuff out and create the physical templates and do the pictures and the glue gun, the glue sticks, and, you know, all this stuff.
I actually had a zine about underground industrial music that I did in the late 90s. That was exactly what you described, cutting and pasting, photocopies, staples. I literally know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, man. You bet. And then, so now something happened also along the way, now that I think about it, where it became harder and harder to print the break zone because Disney, and I forget exactly what the story goes, Disney sued Kinko's over something having to do with Roger Rabbit. And so suddenly, you know, I've been printing hundreds and hundreds of copies of this every month, you know, type of thing. Suddenly they got really freaked out anytime that I had any kind of Disney content.
Ooh.
So I had to, I want to say over the 2 or 3 years that the break zone existed, I went through maybe 3 different printers. And because they just got really gun shy of printing Disney stuff. And I kept saying, no, this is media stuff. This was sent, you know, look, here's the press kit that, you know, the parks used to send these big press kits too. Yeah. I said, here's a press kit. Here are these glossies that are, you know, obviously for reproduction. And boy, man, it became kind of an uphill climb to get some of the Disney stories done. But we did it and we thrived. And, you know, another going back to the Halloween thing then. So we started doing more and more Halloween haunt stuff. And at first, Knott's was really gun shy about it, which is funny because we have such an ironclad relationship with Knott's now. And we've blazed a lot of trails at Knott's Scary Farm as TPA. You know, we were the first to bring them into print in stories like that. We were the first to eventually bring them onto the internet. We were the first to have pictures on the internet from Haunt, and we were the first to have video flow-throughs and stuff online of Knott's Scary Farm. So we have a really long, rich history with Knott's. And but at first, man, they weren't having it. This was when Terry Van Gorder was running the show there, and they made it clear that they were really kind of wary. They were like, why are you so interested in this event? Because the Haunt was kind of treated as the redheaded stepchild of Knott's.
Sure.
And even back then, everybody knew that Haunt was the only thing that kept Knott's in the black year-round. Hmm. And it was still because, you know, the Knott's family was fairly religious. And, you know, it was just kind of like one of those things that I think they kind of did grudgingly. Half the family probably thought, ugh, we got to do this to keep the money coming in. But they weren't really keen on it. And so I got this interesting call one day from the media department saying, you know, we can't really have you interviewing people that are, you know, not monsters and kind of like talking about who they are and that kind of thing. And I said, well, what are you talking about? That's great coverage for you guys.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, no, it's coming from the top. That basically Terry Van Gorder said, look, if you interview people from Knott's that are haunt monsters or whatever, and they're named in your stories in your fanzine, they will be reprimanded and or fired immediately.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really hospitable, and it was just one of those things. It was just kind of like, oh. Okay, so I kind of wrote about the event and things happened, and then Terry left the company and other people came in, and you know, our history with Haunt, people that are familiar with TPA, it kind of stands for itself, but needless to say, it blossomed and bloomed into a really long, you know, decades long relationship that we have with them. Even today, you know, we do our flow through videos, and they have us do our flow through videos of the mazes every year, and we're pretty much the only ones that they work with like that get to do that type of thing.
Oh, nice.
And so it's a very special relationship that we have with them, and it was never like planned to be that way. Obviously, TPA has like really become an integral part of the Southern California haunt community in general. And it wasn't planned that way. There was like no master plan that said, oh, we're going to become a, you know, the hub, you know, of all the haunt information or whatever. It just kind of grew out of my own love of, you know, there were a few home haunts back in the day, like the Hallowed Haunting Grounds in Studio City that we would cover, and there were some in Orange County that I would cover, and those found their way into TPA, and certainly nobody was writing about that stuff, you know, back then.
Yeah.
So it all just kind of meshed together, man. It was crazy. You know, it was a crazy time that theme parks, I mean, on one hand, theme parks were really excited about TPA. On the other hand, there were some that were just like, I don't get this at all. Like, I remember the first time I said to Knott's, I said, we were in their meeting room, and I said to them, I said, can I take pictures of some of your mazes under construction? And it was like deer in the headlights, people looking at me, and they're like, maybe, I guess. Like,
why would anyone want to see that?
And we're like, why? And I remember the guy said to me, he goes, why in the hell would anybody care about pictures of a maze under construction? It's all about the event when it's open. Nobody cares about the mazes under construction. I said, no, I think fans might be into that. And now, can you imagine not having pictures of like Haunt Build or anything like that? I mean, that's a big deal. All the haunts, everybody shows construction. And so we did that. And then at first they're like, why in the hell would anybody want to see that? And it was just a gut feeling. It was something that I wanted to see. So, again, I figured other people would want to see it.
Right. And so fan first, right?
Always. You know, that one of our things that I've always written about, I've said it was a publication by fans for fans. That was something that I absolutely stood by. And that's always been one of our cornerstones. We even now don't do anything that doesn't interest us. Right. If it doesn't interest me, I'm not going to write about it. But if it does interest me, I'm going to focus on it. And I know now, because 22 years experience doing it, it's going to interest other people too.
Right.
And so that it's been an amazing evolution. And I guess it's weird because, I mean, it jumps around and it's weird and it's old and there was no internet. And then we went on to a BBS. We had a BBS. We were part of a BBS system. Now, for those of you that don't know what a BBS, it's a bulletin board system, and you had your 300 baud modem, and you would dial in to – we had a web – we were part of a BBS system called the Black Rainbow, and Theme Park Adventure was online with that. We were the very first, by the way, we were the very first themed entertainment fan zine, whatever you want to call us, online. That catered to all the parks and all that too. So that was another first that TPA did, just because not by design, just we were in the right place at the right time. It's when it was all happening. And you would put that phone number into your modem, and your modem would call up and do that horrible screechy sound, and like a fax machine, right? And then you'd log in, and you could read all the new messages. People would make, you know, new messages like, what do you think of that? You know, what do you think of the Skyway closing at Disney? You know, whatever they're talking about. And then you could reply, but then you had to log off so that other people could log on and read what you wrote and respond to you.
Wow. It was really, you know, I never experienced that personally. I think I started at AOL. So I was like,
and then, you know, and then eventually it kind of morphed into, you know, I had a friend that owned an Amiga store in Mission Viejo. And I remember the first day he called me over to my, he goes, you got to come over. I just got home from work. I got this thing. You've got to come over. Bring a picture. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, just bring a picture from a bar. Any, well, like what? Jesus, dude, any picture. Just bring a picture. So I took a picture. I don't remember what it was. And he had this thing that looked like a shoebox. And the shoebox had, it looked like a 3x5 clear window in it. And he goes, now watch this. And he put my picture down and he put the shoebox on top of the picture. And he pressed a button on his Amiga computer, and it started scanning the picture.
Wow, that's a game changer.
And it was the first time, and I want to say, I don't even know that it was saved as a JPEG. I think it was a GIF that it saved it as. Mm-hmm. And it took forever. It was like 3 minutes, man. It was like, you know. But I was watching in real time as line by line, this picture was showing up on his computer screen in color. And that was a huge turning point. I was like, wait a minute, we can take pictures at Disneyland or at Knott's or whatever, and we can scan these pictures with this newfangled machine called a scanner, and we can put them on the BBS, and people can download the pictures, and they can read then about, you know, this new attraction that's being built, and then they can download pictures that we just took this week. And it was revolutionary.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing. There's got to be people listening going, what are you talking about? Because we all have our phones, right? I mean, everybody takes pictures that are amazing with their phones now, and you put it on Twitter, and bam, thousands of people around the world have it. And that's just – it wasn't that way. And so it's just crazy, the evolution that we've seen going from print publication in 94 to full-blown media distribution, you know, digital distribution now – in 2017. I mean, it's just, we could talk forever about it, but right. Like half are sleeping already, but one person finds it really, really interesting. But that's, in a nutshell, that's kind of us, you know, growing up. It's all over the board. I know, it's just, it's crazy. But what other, like, ask me what you're thinking about our evolution or anything that you wanted to know more about.
Well, one of the things of interest was something that you and I were talking about last week when I was interviewing you for the Foolish Mortals documentary.
Yay.
But before, actually, let's take a little step back. You've talked about all these things you were doing with TPA, but and your TPA is still going strong right now, but it's not your full-time job, and if I'm not mistaken, no. It never really was. So this has always been something you've done, like, in your quote-unquote free time.
Yeah.
So
what's free time, James?
Yeah, I know. That's why I said quote-unquote.
But, no, you know, I always say that it's my quote-unquote, you know, it's my serious hobby, right?
Right.
And it certainly, it is beyond that. It has brought it's brought community together. It's brought people together. It's brought fans, you know, fans together. It's become an integral part of Midsummer Scream. So it has served a purpose. And it's amazing that this little thing that I just thought I would do back in 94, just because I was a geeky fan and wanted to share with other geeky fans, you know, all the doors that it's opened, all the amazing friendships. And that really is – it's about friendships. Like, I have friendships with people that I really looked up to, you know, including Tony Baxter, that it evolved beyond TPA and became these and Don Dorsey and, you know, these folks that I just, as a fan, you look up to and you get gaga and speechless about at the time, but then you just become friends, mm-hmm. you know, and it lives on longer than the magazine. And so anytime I really even talk to these guys, we rarely even talk about industry stuff, really. I mean, it's I've been fortunate in that it, you know, in Mark and Alice Davis, and when I did my Pirates book that took 3 years to come out. God, that's a whole other interview. But so I did the feature issue on Pirates, and I got to know Mark and Alice Davis really well. And, you know, God bless her. I'm still, you know, friends with Alice Davis to this day, and was with her on the phone and mm-hmm. and in spirit when Mark passed away. And being able just to share a little slice of life, you know,
yeah.
with these people that have created these attractions that we've grown up with, that we're in love with, that are part of our DNA.
Yeah.
You know, that is a side blessing of TPA that is, I hold that so near and dear to my heart, and I'm constantly humbled by that. All the friends that we've made, you know, we have a tremendous fan community that, you know, whenever we have mixers or whatever, people come out of the woodwork and come and just spend an evening with us and just enjoying each other's company and laughter and sharing in stories. And then, of course, the haunt community, the Halloween community here in Southern California that we've become a part of and been so blessed to be part of. You know, it's just it's one of those things that you just look back and go, damn, I never knew that this would have so many layers and be so important in my life back, you know, 22 years ago when I started this. I really didn't think, you know, you never start this thing going, oh, it's going to last for decades.
No, you would think, you would never think, especially 22 years.
You don't think that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think that at all. And to be honest with you, there have been three times that I've been ready to, you know, in the past that I've been ready just to shut it all down. Just because you get to a point where you're just so burnt out that we joke about not having any free time, but really you don't have any free time.
Right.
And so it's hard when you're juggling a career and then you have, you know, TPA and then you have, you know, a partner. You know, I'm very fortunate to have Johanna as my partner and my best friend. And luckily she is the secret. Now going into the newer versions of TPA, I've made it very clear. She's the nuclear engine that runs TPA, and it's her involvement and her enthusiasm that, you know, saved the, you know, I call it the magazine still. It's saved TPA once. She said, no, you're not going to hang it up. We're going to make it bigger and better than ever before. And this was years ago. And so she absolutely saved it from me hanging it up because, you know, we both work in the industry. I work as a show writer for Rethink Leisure and Entertainment, and she works as a concept manager at BRC Imagination Arts. And so it's one of those things where I was like, well, you know, we've kind of climbed that ladder and we've actually crossed, we've gone through the looking glass and we're now, you know, we're in the industry. We work in the industry. So why do we want to work our asses off in the industry and then come home at night and spend hours working on the fan side, you know, a fanzine type thing? And she said, because that's exactly what we are. We're fans still. We are fans first.
Right.
That's why we're in this industry. And so, I mean, really, she absolutely deserves all the credit for keeping TPA alive. And in keeping TPA alive, you know, we evolved into other things. Like, you know, for 3 years, we helped produce Scare LA, which we were very proud of. And now that has morphed into Midsummer Scream, which is bigger and better than we could have ever imagined anything would be. And, you know, that TPAers that have been around for a long time, they have Johanna to thank for that, because I frankly was kind of out of steam, you know. And she said, oh, no, I'm driving. We're taking this forward. And she was the one who insisted that we try mixers again. You know, back in the day, dude, I tried to have like gatherings, and like if I called a gathering at some point in the year, dude, if like three people showed up, I was so stoked.
Right. You know?
And it was always like so awkward. Hi, you know, I like rides,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when she said, you know, maybe because what happened was Crater Sam's opened at Disneyland, and we started going there a lot because, you know, booze. And she said, we should have meets here. I said, oh, no, we're not going to do that. Well, why not? I said, we're not opening ourselves up to that, because we're going to call for a meet and no one will show up. And that's really freaking embarrassing.
Sure. Been there,
done that. I said, look, there are some groups, you know, Theme Park Review, Rob Alvey, he could say we're going to sit here and stare at each other like monkeys and 100 people show up. And that just is not what TPA was. I could never get people to come hang out. And she goes, I don't know. I think that people will come to Trader Sam's. I said, all right, we're going to try. And people came. And they came and came and came. And a lot of people came. And so she can also be credited with the creation of our mixers that we have. Now we've kind of throttled back. We do it maybe quarterly now, just because it takes a lot of work to do it all the time.
Right.
And we're busy with stuff, right? So, but we have it at Don the Beachcomber now, and we're gonna have another one in March. I hope you guys come. And lots of people come, like over 100 people show up just to hang out, which is really great, because I can remember a time that I sat there for 3 hours at a Denny's and nobody showed up. So, I mean, wow. I've been, right? Play the sad music now, James. So I was the only child. TPA was my only friend and nobody came. But no, I mean, it was one of those things. It was like, okay, we got to figure out like what we are and who we are. And so when she said we got to have mixers, I said, oh no. But I put my faith in her, and you know, our mixers are very successful now. So it's really funny because we've kind of run the gambit. We've been there since the beginning with self-publishing. We merged onto the information superhighway, and somehow we have a website. I'm not the most technical person in the world, so somehow we have a website. Josh Quillen, who's a good friend of ours, he helped me set up the TPA site the way it is now, and it serves its purpose, and it's fine, it's great, and we got people from all over the world that come and log in and look at our stories and all that. And of course, anytime there's a new digital technology, we try to jump on that with Periscope. We love Periscope because it's instant contact with people. And that's the challenge too, and I'm sure you know this too. Now that we're in the digital age, of everything has to be immediate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So like back in the day, and this kind of goes back to our original conversation of like media events and things. Dude, so when Indiana Jones opened, Indiana Jones had a 3-day opening. It had parties and all sorts of things, right? Yeah. And I took all sorts of pictures, wrote down notes. I then went back to the Photoshop that I worked at. I, you know, printed the pictures. I figured out which ones were good. Oh, then I went to Kinko's and I made, you know, shrunk them down to 75%, and I cut them out and I put them on the templates, and I had that printed. I picked that up a week later. Then I mailed that out and people got that like 2 weeks after that. And guess what? It was still fresh news.
Well, yeah.
People got the indie issue and they're like, this is amazing. The pictures of Sinbad and all these people at the party, you know, Sinbad, what?
Sinbad. But,
yeah. But you know, so we had all these pictures and that was new. Today, man, it is so, in 22 years, it has changed so much. Today, if you are not periscoping the opening of an attraction, as well as taking pictures and recording it in 4K and doing all these things, you're old news. If it's not live, it's old news. So now Johanna and I, when we go to these media events, back in the day, it was fun. I mean, you could go back, you could chill, you could do whatever you're going to do. You get plates full of food and hang out with people and take a few pictures and know that you had a week or two before it was like even seen anywhere. Today, everything's immediate. If you're not periscoping everything, you're old news, baby. That's it. And so we've had to learn how to use these tools like Periscope and Twitter, of course, right? And it's very challenging. It takes two of us. You know, she takes still pictures. I shoot video. Somewhere in the middle there, we try to Periscope live if we have signal. It's very different. I mean, the theater of operations for you know, covering an opening event of something, oh my God, man, it's so different these days than it was back then.
For sure.
It's exciting, but it's maddening. And it was kind of, I don't know, it was just kind of magical back then, knowing that we could take pictures and take our time and making sure they all looked really cool and laying them out in a newsletter and sending them out to people and knowing that that was going to be the first glimpse that people ever got of these things, which is really hard to think of now today because we take pictures of our lunch and tweet it.
right? Yeah.
So it's an amazing journey that we've been on. And, you know, we do have TPAers that have been with us really since the beginning. which is amazing. We have a lot of new people that find out about us. I'm sure that a lot of people listening to your podcast have never heard of TPA. And it's just we're not the biggest, we're not the best. But one thing I can claim is that we're the oldest, that we're the OG, we're the original. And we love that. We love having that distinction. That's something that can't be taken away. And we love that. It's been a tremendous journey for us. And at the end of the day, we always are humbled. We're humbled by the journey. We're humbled by the support and the community, right? And the friendships that have come out of TPA.
Stay tuned for the second part of our interview with Rick West as we get into some details, like what it was like covering the building and opening of the Indiana Jones Adventure attraction in Disneyland, and so much more fun. That's coming up in our very next episode. To check out our show notes, articles, original videos, and all that stuff, links to social media, everything you could possibly need, Creepy Kingdom, guess where you can find it? That's creepykingdom.com. And until next time, keep
it. I have a girl now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha